Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go back to 2011 with Squidge. Let's look at the World Cup again with Squidge.
Hello, and welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup retrospective, or for 1 week only, the Squidge Bag of Shit retrospective, where we will be celebrating, diving into an utter sack of turds that was Romania's game against Georgia from 2011. I'm joined as ever by Mr. William Owen, am I not?
Yeah, I guess you are. I decided still to turn up rather than saying, I'll record with you and then just, you know, pull a sickie or whatever.
I wouldn't have blamed you.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have blamed you at all. It was certainly a game, wasn't it?
Like, yeah. Is this going to be, because I mean, it's a funny one. This week is, of course, the week of people claiming that rugby is shit now.
And I did think about this the whole way I was watching the game, because it was a bit like, I don't want to moan about rugby. I'm so sick of the jiffies and the Stephen Joneses, the 1,000 million awards, Stephen Jones, rather than Wales attack coach and loveliest man on the earth, other than Blaine Scully and Brian Habana. But I did.
And Tyler Rajon.
Yeah, the list is building, isn't it?
Yeah.
The like eighth loveliest man in the world. The loveliest man in West Wales. But I did find myself just thinking, this is really bad.
Yeah.
This is a really bad game of rugby. We've got to talk about it and put it out this week.
That's the thing. It's really bad timing that the stars have aligned perfectly for us to talk about this game in the week where everyone is just so wrongly going, oh, rugby's shit now. And I suppose, if anything, let's try and put it this way. This game is proof that rugby is so much better now than it was in 2011.
Yeah, well, it was like watching a game in the 70s.
Yeah.
It felt really, really 70s. It felt really old school in that the skill levels were low.
Yeah.
Scrums took on, you know, quite a big importance, but weren't deciding games.
Yeah.
No one was doing anything. No one was aiming where they were kicking. No one could take high balls. It was, no one could kick goals.
Yeah.
You know, it was, oh man, it was a bit like you, it's like they were looking around this pool, right? And they kind of went, and we said when we watched it, there's no way any game in this World Cup can be worse than England against Argentina from that opening
round.
Hold
my beer.
And then, well, I was going to, exactly, Romania and Georgia went, hold my absinthe. Wait, no, I'll down it instead, then play 80 minutes of rugby.
Yeah.
Because they didn't look sober. And
not in a Marty Banks kind of way either.
No, in a, we're going to be unable to stand.
Yeah.
There was no hand-eye coordination. There was no actual accurate skill set. It was bad.
So bad. And that's the thing, like, at least now when, because like, shit games of rugby still happen. You know, like,
we're
not here to deny. I'm aware that this episode might just turn into a big rant about how much of a fucking idiot Stephen Jones.
He's a dork,
to be fair. I don't know why the word dork came into my head, but
you just thought of him and you just thought, what's the first word?
Stephen
Dork. Stephen Dork.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I'm aware that this might just turn into a big rant about how much of an idiot Stephen Jones is, but
how big a Jones Stephen Dork is.
Yeah, but I've completely forgotten my point because I just can't believe that the word dork has found its way into this podcast.
No, but like, okay, like the game Austin Healey, I had a conversation with Austin Healey on Twitter on Saturday morning about, basically, he went, that Newcastle Sale game from the previous night was a load of shit. And I went, no, actually, there were interesting things happening, just you weren't talking about them.
Yeah.
And then he didn't reply. And then someone else replied saying,
conversation?
Austin Healey, you're a... Well, someone else then said, Austin Healey, you're a twat. And then he said, that's childish of you to say that. And by the way, the game was a bag of shit. And I then replied saying, like, the game wasn't a bag of shit because of this point I made. Then Austin Healey didn't reply again.
Right.
Which is clearly, like, I had this brief exchange with Josh Gardner of the Blood and Mud podcast.
Yeah.
Where it was like, it was amazing, I managed to shit Austin Healey up. I'm the first person to ever manage it.
Yeah.
And he was saying, Josh was saying it took him 3 days before Austin Healey blocked him. of them going back and forth. Whereas me, he just went, oh no, I can't reply to that.
I have a mixed stance on Austin Healey because, like, it's easy to call him a twat, and I don't think it's that simple. I think he plays a character which he does very well. And to be honest, I actually enjoy the character he plays. Like, it's not just a case of going, oh, I respect what he's doing, but he is also a twat. Because, like, a lot of people are. And frankly, I think Stephen Jones is kind of like that because I think he knows that he knows nothing about rugby and gets a kick out of being controversial. And, like, for example, there's another host of another rugby podcast that we're aware of who was. Say, like, we're aware, I'm not going to name the guy's name.
No, but and I don't know the guy personally. Who we're talking about.
Like, I've never had really exchanges with the guy, except, you know, in your
defense. Till Christmas.
Yeah, that's true. But usually the only times I've ever spoken with this guy will be brief things on the end of arguments he's having with you. However, that guy is clearly playing a character because it's his way of trying to remain relevant in the world of rugby podcasting.
Exactly.
Which is funny that I'm saying that, but, you know. Regardless, I think, Austin Healey's very good at what, you know, that sort of thing that he does. And he does wind people up. But I do think that aside from the game on Friday, the Newcastle Sale game, which, as we say, wasn't nearly as bad as people were making out, and there was
no.
And I guess this is the point I was making earlier, but, like, Austin Healey, there's so many rugby pundits these days and commentators who just clearly aren't quite following where it's going. They understand that it's changing, but they haven't sort of figured out the small things about why.
Yeah.
Austin Healy's not one of those, because Austin Healey does know what's going on, and that's why I was so disappointed to see him chatting so much shit about that game on Friday.
I think Austin Healey is following attack analysis really closely.
Yes.
And so he's very good on that, but he isn't really following defence or kicking.
Yeah.
Whereas I think someone like Ugo Monu and Justin Marshall, I hold, are excellent pundits.
Sure.
And not, you know, I've spoken to Ugo a few times, I'm slightly biased on that because he is lovely and said he loves our mum. But they both clearly follow what's going on, and they do keep up with kind of tactics and analysis and so on and so forth, and what's changing and what's happening. Austin Healey, there's a few that do it selectively, and there's plenty that just fallen completely behind. There's some, you know, like, I think as a whole, Dylan Hartley and Sam Warburton are both excellent pundits, but they've retired recently.
Yeah.
So they're still up on what's going on, you know, and it's too early to say if they've kept up, but they're really good pundits at the minute.
And I think that Austin Healey is up there with the best sort of analysts of first phase attack or whatever. Not even necessarily first phase, but I guess attack over one or two phases rather than a multitude of seven plus phases, I suppose, is my point. But I think that at the minute, right, I just say Sam Warburton's one pundit name drop is just a really good, you know, just a pundit for everything he does because he's great.
Yes.
But I think in terms of attack pundits, like, I think Nolly Waterman is the best.
Nolly Waterman's fantastic. Yeah.
And, like, it's not always over just one or two phases is the point. And, like, maybe, like, she might not be able to analyse a set play as well as Austin Healey would, and that's fine, but she'll be able to analyse the structure of an entire attack better than basically any other pundit that is currently doing mainstream rugby punditry.
And that's why you have multiple pundits, you know, you get on, like, it's the thing David Flatman's carved out a real niche for is he's the pundit who can explain scrummaging to the average Joe watching rugby every now and again. He's really good at it, you know, and again, that's kind of that should be the makeup of a panel, you know. We probably do need more props who are able to do so, you know. I remember Mike Ross saying what he wanted to do when he retired was to, I think he now runs like an internet, like a broadband thing, storage solution or something. But he said he wanted to be like an equivalent of a TMO, the guy in the referee's ear who would feed back what was going on at the scrum.
Oh, that's interesting.
And he wanted to add that, and he wanted to do that. Yeah. And obviously that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a... I would move us back onto the game we're supposed to be talking about.
I'd just like to quickly wrap up my point that I was making about that Newcastle Sale game, because, as I say, like, there are... And if we pretend that this was a really shit game, like people are saying it was, like, if there are such a thing as really bad games of rugby that happen these days. Like, I'm not going to deny that. But at least you can see what both teams are trying to achieve, because there is such a set structure in attack and defence, and such a sort of competitive nature and skill level, which is higher than it was 10 years ago. I know that competitive nature is one thing that's always existed in sport since the dawn of time, but there's a different sort of application of that and approach to that.
Yeah.
And it will be different in 10 years. You know, that's one thing that will always fluctuate, because it's a way of exploiting how other people are playing a game, naturally. And that happens probably in all sports rather than just rugby. But with a game like this, to bring it back round to Georgia versus Romania 2011, it's much more difficult to see something like that because both teams are just sort of, they have a very simple game plan of sending one up runners and rucking over, keeping the ball, and then kick it if you're in your own half and hope for the best.
Yeah, it's really old school. Yeah. As you say, there's not really a... 2011 was kind of this transition point, as we've said before, between what rugby is now in that it's very coach-focused and there's an awful lot on a designed game plan.
Yeah.
And what it was... That was kind of there in 2007 and 03, but it wasn't as vital. You could get away with playing more off the cuff.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, it's kind of... These two teams are not up to the standard. No. And I think there's a part of it, and this is why I think rugby will continue to get better and better and better, in terms of standards at least, and what it can produce as a product, that you look at the current crop of players, and they've all been professional since they were about 16, 17.
Yeah.
You look at the, like, the 2003 World Cup teams, they turned professional in their mid-20s when rugby went professional. You look at teams in this World Cup, and they probably went professional around 18, 19 when they got picked up by a senior team having played age grade rugby until then.
Makes a big difference. Yeah.
And there's this thing, it's kind of awful, the talk of like Rupini Kaukau's son having offers from clubs age 11.
Yeah.
And that's starting to happen in rugby. Yeah. You know, we're starting to see more and more players being brought in younger and younger and younger. And,
like, it's happened in football for ages, hasn't it? Like, I can remember reading an article about 5 years ago about there being, like, an 8-year-old boy with no feet got signed by Barcelona for, like, a massive deal.
Yeah.
And, I mean, naturally it's going to happen in sport if you see somebody get... But I suppose there will be cases where it drives people insane and they stop playing at an early age, so it's a gamble. But,
Well, it happened with... There was the other guy that got really hyped up and ended up going for the NFL.
Oh, Tyrese Johnson-Fisher.
Yes, thank you, yeah. And in his video, he posted why he was quitting because of all the pressure on him.
Yeah.
He put a Reddit comment by friend of the pod, Adam Jenkins.
Really?
Yeah. He had like five comments in there. One of them was from
Adam,
friend of the podcast, Adam Jenkins.
What did he say? Do you know?
He just said something like, you know, these YouTube highlight players so rarely ever live up to what we see of them when they're dominant. The only one that's done it is Taniela Tupou.
Yeah.
He's the only player who's gone on to be really good at international standards.
Yeah. If there are more, please alert us. But I think that he's certainly the only one that stands out to me. I'm sure there must be another one somewhere, even if it's playing like the second tier or whatever. But
there was a montage of Santiago Cordero that went around of him age 17 playing in the Argentine League, just stepping everyone.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm sure there are ones like that out
there
somewhere.
But it's not quite the same thing.
No, granted.
It was a freakish talent playing at a lower level than he would be.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Anyway, so this game, Georgia v Romania, it was a... For the two teams involved, it was a huge clash. The two of them were looking at it as being...
This was their chance to win a game for both, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's worth me saying as well that, like, me saying that this was proof that rugby was so much worse in 2011, I don't mean that to say that, like, any other game in the Rugby World Cup is this bad, because this is by far the worst game that we've watched. And, like, this is an anomaly in that sense. Anyway, that's that over with. Sorry,
Yeah,
so this was the must-win game for both. And obviously, Georgia had done well against Scotland. Obviously, they targeted that one as well. Turned that into a fairly shit game as well, to be fair. But it is what it is. And Georgia had also been battered by England. Romania also ran Scotland quite close. And they had fun against Argentina.
Mm.
And again, England found them pretty easy beats, to be honest. And so this is Romania's final game of the tournament. So it's an extra incentive to beat their neighbours relative to tier two rugby teams.
Yeah. However, they were coming off a 4-day turnaround again.
Yeah.
Which Marius Tinku was not happy about afterwards. I don't know if you listened to
I did.
Yeah.
Well, I tried to, but the Georgian commentators talked over it.
Just talked over the whole thing, so I had to listen to it like three times.
So they interviewed, forgive me because I'm going to need to check his name, Ilya Zedginidze, who was one of the Georgian second rows, who was clearly the one player who spoke English on the team. So they interviewed him, the New Zealand pundits, afterwards. And the Georgian pundits just listened to him.
He had like a slight Scottish accent.
Yeah, he was very... Just
it was odd. Yeah, like his accent kind of shifted around between Eastern European, Scottish, and then a kind of like... that. Yeah, so
Yeah, no, but the Georgian commentators just paused during him and let him speak, even though it was a different language,
yeah,
and just spoke over Marius Tinku.
And at one point, towards the end of his interview, they say, Marius Tinku's talking.
Yeah.
And then they kind of like look at him for a minute and then go back to it. So you've kind of got to really listen in, because it's not like they've muted the audio.
No.
You can hear Tinku speaking underneath.
Yeah.
And you've then got to kind of like zoom your ears in, yeah, to try and hear it. So at one point, Tinku makes a little joke, and it's quite nice. He has like quite a good like dinner party host laugh at his own joke. I'll tell you what, right? Marius Tinku is nowhere near as ugly as I remember him being.
No, he has.
He's sort of adorable.
He's got a sweet enough face, hasn't he?
He has, hasn't he? Because I think of him as being this like ugly little bastard who niggly front rower.
Yeah,
but actually, he's got quite a sweet little face, and he's got quite. He looks like he's sort of like. He's not handsome, but he sort of has like massive dad energy about him.
I think
when you see him off
the pitch.
Maybe
a contrary comment to some certain close friends of the podcast, but I think he's one of the better looking Romanian hookers I've seen.
Yeah, yeah. If only there was some pundit out there that we didn't mention in that opening ramble who could confirm, who knew anything about Romanian hookers,
sure,
had maybe spent 10 grand on having drinks with them,
yeah,
because it was only drinks.
Yeah.
Because
we don't know
what he spent the money on.
You might have got some chicken wings with them.
Yeah, we need to stress, when that pundit that we aren't naming went in and spent 10 grand in an establishment ran by Romanian hookers,
yeah,
we don't know what he spent the money on.
No.
Right?
No.
So, could be anything. Could be drinks.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Speaking of hookers, I think we should pick up on all three of the highlights from this game.
Okay.
So we have the try. We have the successful kick at goal.
I was going to say, personally.
And we have the sidestep.
Personally, I was going to save back the try till about at least the half hour mark into this podcast. Maybe 45 minutes, you know, before teasing the fact there's a try in this game.
There's three good things, right? There's one try, there's one sidestep, and there's one time someone catches a high ball successfully.
Okay, which of those do you want to start with?
Should we start with the high balls?
Okay.
Because it's so about 34 seconds into the game, Romania hang up a high ball, and the Georgian winger, I believe it's Tondua,
yeah,
who is still playing, Tondua sprints on to cover it, and then just lets it bounce, just steps
it's
away.
So bad.
Like he flinches when he sees it coming down.
Yeah.
And it set the tone because no one can catch.
Yeah, it's like, dude, this is like international level and you're just choosing
this
to
is the
not
World
catch
Cup.
The ball. Yeah.
The literal World Cup.
The first thing I have noted down is that 2 minutes in, we'd already experienced our second knock on.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to know take a guess how far in it is before someone successfully catches a high ball?
Christ. 7 minutes in.
5 minutes 32.
Right, wow.
So you're not far off. And bear in mind, there's like five kicks by that point.
Yeah, wow.
But the whole game is teams either not taking high balls, you know, not even trying to catch them, just being off-positioned and letting them bounce, which is a cardinal sin in Test rugby.
Yeah.
Or it's them trying and just dropping them.
Yeah.
And I feel genuinely quite surprised whenever anyone does it. Like, there's one point towards the end of the game where Dimitri Basilaia, the Georgia number 8, just drops a high ball behind him.
Yeah.
And so it gets quite lucky, then passes it into his 10, who thumps it to Daniel Carpo, who's opposite number 8, who just knocks it on straight in front,
yeah,
of him. And that kind of felt a bit like the game in a,
sure,
nutshell.
As I say, that's the first thing I've written down my notes. The second is 5 minutes in. Christ, I'm already bored.
I know. I was bored a minute in.
Yeah. It was just really dull. And there was a couple of penalties exchanged.
Yeah.
And like, it reached a point, like, sometimes you get games like the Scotland-Argentina game. I had like three or four pages worth of notes. And I was just trying, like, there was a couple of really significant things I was having to just not note down because I had too much to write. Here I've written down, Merab tries weird pirouette move. Like, who cares?
Exactly.
And they put Georgia are bad. Then, oh my God, Tinku can't even throw straight. And you know it's bad when Tinku can't throw. And to be fair, I think he only did one lot straight throw. That was the only mistake he made in this game, to be fair. He was trying his best, but yeah.
Oh, I think the first kind of big talking point thing that happens is there's a... Romania get a penalty straight in front of the posts. And because in that first game, Chris Patterson cursed this pool forever.
Yeah.
Dumbrava steps up to take it and shanks it wide. And Romania, then the camera crew cut to the bench. And there are the entire Romanian bench trying to hold in their anger. And it was my favourite moment of the game. Because all of them look furious, but are trying not to say anything because he's their teammate. And they're trying not to be sick of his shit. He keeps missing these over and over again. And then at the end of the bench is who I presume is the Romanian team manager, who looks about 70 and has fallen asleep.
Yeah.
And they cut back to him in the second half. He hasn't moved. So I think he might be dead.
And also I've noted down there's a point when Adivoji Tonyita makes this half break and offloads it to Dundon Brava, who just drops it under no pressure because he just can't catch. Bear in mind, this is the same guy who, against England, got that intercept from Toby Flood and just did. He was really hoping he would drop it, because, and we said this when we had Sav on, was just really hoping he'd drop it because he was that tired. And it's like, if you're knackered enough that you're dropping the ball under no pressure 10 minutes in on line breaks, then it's not going well.
Oh, there is one line break quite early on where Georgia have some numbers. Gorgodze makes a little bust and then offloads it to his winger, to Gigar. I could never say this guy's name when you're playing fullback for Georgia. Gigari, thank you. Because it's one of those names you look at and you think looks simple enough, and then you kind of trip over it, you're trying to say it out loud. And offloads to Gigari, who just runs into touch in trying to avoid the tackle. Like, he doesn't have any awareness of where the touchline is. He's trying to swerve outside the guy. He doesn't realize he's gone over the touchline. And it's kind of telling if that's what this game is now.
I worry that we've already gone through like 50% of the things that have happened in this game. And we've been talking about it for a couple of minutes. But I think the one thing that really infuriated me was that there's a point towards the end of the first half when Julian Dimitras, who we've spoken about before, massive boot on the lad.
Yep.
He sticks a ball in the air, and I think, wow, that's really good. That's a really perfectly placed bomb. And, you know, it's that point where, like, often you can have a really terrible game, and it just takes one really good piece of skill to sort of pick it up and raise the spirits of one team, which will raise the spirits of the other team, and then it becomes a bit of a dogfight, which I was kind of hoping this game would turn into. Because, as I said, I remember it being quite boring, but I don't remember it being this bad. Yeah. As I said, I think I enjoyed this less than Scotland-Georgia, because at least there was a novelty to Scotland being shit in attack.
And there was a novelty to it being a Tier 2 nation pushing a Tier 1 nation.
Of course
nation.
There is.
That's and always like, going
to
be a
You know, you always want the Tier 2 nations to do well against the Tier 1 nations, don't you? So naturally that's a thing. But
like, I think there were more storylines going on in that game and Argentina against England.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, anyway, Dumitras sticks this bomb in the air. And you think, oh yeah, it's, you know, that's, as I say, a good piece of skill. And it comes down perfectly for him, and he's in behind the Georgian line. And frankly, he's only got one man to beat. But he just drops it under no pressure. Like, if he catches that ball, he just has the Georgian fullback to beat. And, you know, I don't know if he has any support or anything, but frankly, I'd back him to at least make a decent break out of it or get an offload in or something, even if they don't quite score a try out of it. And that's what makes it really frustrating.
The other great knock-on that Dumitras makes, which is a great sentence to be saying, we're going, God, there's two really good knock-ons by this guy in this game. That's the level we've stooped to. But he, in the second half, Romania again have a bit of an overlap, and he's popping up as the penultimate man. You know, he's got to, like, draw the last guy and give it onto the winger outside him. And then he just knocks it on. He just drops the ball in front of him, like, cleanly drops it in that really simple, just eye on the ball, underrate should be taking those passes.
Yeah.
Loses it in front of him, and then the referee blows for the scrum, you know, like a moment later. Mm-hmm. And he turns and points like, oh, me? Did I knock it on? Like, he didn't know. Yeah. Like, he wasn't aware. Like, it's when, you know, you just brush a kick in the air or something.
Sure.
When you've got no idea. Like, he didn't realise he just dropped the ball right in front of him. Like, that's not the moment to try and play innocence.
Yeah, and it's one of those where it would be unfair to say it was under no pressure whatsoever, but it was against a drift defence. So it's not like anybody was in his face.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he had any reason to start pooing his pants, you know?
You say a drift defence, right? The Romanian defence, can we talk about that for a second?
Sure.
Because it was a bit like a basketball defence, in that there's no contact allowed. Basically, the Romanian defence would rush up on you, they'd get right up in your face, and instead of making the tackle and getting you to ground and, you know, killing the attack, they'd wait for you to make a decision.
Yeah.
So they get right up in your face, and then if you wanted to pass or kick or whatever, they'd let you make that decision, or if you want to crush it up, it's up to you, you know? But they wouldn't tackle you until you'd made your decision already, rather than dictating anything.
Yeah. And that's the thing, from what you were saying before about the novelty of Scotland, Georgia being a tier one team versus a tier two team, and the other one pushing close or whatever, but like,
yeah,
it didn't have that because Georgia, this game was, it felt one-sided because Georgia were just very clearly the better team. But,
yeah.
Or more to the point, Romania were the worst team.
Yes. Yep. I've so much of it, though, is just the goal kicking. And I've talked a lot in the games on the episodes on the games in this pool about the goal kicking.
Yeah.
But it's bad again. Like, Romania keep missing shots at goal. And, like, I considered giving, and there's a few moments that contradict that, as we'll get on to. I considered giving Mirab Kukashvili man of the match just because. He kicked his goals. Like, he actually managed to kick some... You know, Georgia had a 78% kick success rate, which I think is probably the highest in this pool overall.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Romania just kept missing shots at goal.
Yeah. Really
it
bad.
Was bad.
Yeah.
You know, it was 50%. It was free missed, free...
Tell you what, I'm so glad this pool is nearly done with.
I know. We've got, what, two more games left.
Yeah, because Georgia are almost there after this.
Against Argentina, where Argentina just do some fun stuff again.
Yeah. Do England have another game?
England have Scotland.
England have Scotland, of course. So, yeah, that's all we have left of this pool. And then kicks can start sailing through the posts. And you know what? Here's a point. Do we reckon anybody in Romania might potentially be white baiting at this point?
I don't know. Do you think anyone might be up for it?
Yeah. Do you think Mike Waringi's around, white baiting somewhere?
No. Don't mention his cursed name.
Or Jody Rose.
Can you try and explain Mike Waringi for anyone listening?
Mike Waringi, I don't know if this... I assume that eventually we'll end up doing a series of this podcast on the 2015 Rugby World Cup, in which Romania had a fly half called Mike Waringi. Waringi, even, who was a Kiwi. I have no idea how he qualified for Romania. I don't know what his connection was. But he was, firstly, incredibly slow.
Yeah.
Second, could he really kick? I'm not sure. I just don't get Mike Waringi. He also just looked very strange. He looked very like... He looked like a middle-aged man who just accidentally walked onto a rugby field.
Yeah, and it wasn't even like you see often for Tier 2 Nations, there'll be ITM Cup standard players who, you know, kind of travel across and end up playing in the... Like, Romania have a semi-professional league.
Yeah.
So you often see players from Tonga and from wherever
move
across, players who struggle to get to wherever. Mike Waringi didn't even play to that standard. Like, he didn't play professional rugby in New Zealand. He just somehow fell over, ended up in Romania... and found himself playing in their league.
Yeah. I'll add that the Romanian 2015 Rugby World Cup kit was really nice. And just he just didn't suit it whatsoever, which was just really difficult to look at.
Tell you what, right? There's an okay team out in his the team he plays for.
Yeah.
They have Ruaka from Fiji, you know, international.
Oh, the seventh player. Ruanga, yeah.
TC Kisting of Namibia.
Oh, yes, he's great.
Yeah.
I really like him.
They've got an uncapped Tongan winger. They've got three Romanian international wingers as well. They've got Becca Bisadza.
Right, yeah.
They've got Mihai Diko, Romanian prop.
Don't know who he is.
They've got a couple of Georgians. I quite like this team. I might pick them as my favourite team in the Romanian league.
We might have to do a draft of Romanian league rugby later in this episode.
Oh, they won the league last year. Okay, that makes sense. Sorry, I'm now just looking at the Romanian league rugby because it's more interesting than this.
We have nothing better to do. We don't have any games lined up this week. You know what? Should we have another game of Let's Go to the Mall?
No. Oh. No, sorry.
Gutted. I'm scraping the barrel. Okay, I'm just going to start playing Snake on my phone for the rest of this episode.
Fair enough. Should we...
See my point?
I mean, we could talk about the game.
See my point?
Should we see if anything's on TV?
Yeah, all right. You know what? While we're here, just to pad this episode out a lot, have you watched any good films recently? I can't believe I just asked that question. I can't believe I set him off.
I watched Marie Antoinette last night, the Sophia Coppola It's good. Yeah, it's, I think it's a really... I hadn't seen it before. It's the last of Sofia Coppola's films I had to watch, so I've now seen all of them. But it's a really good kind of unlikely meshing of filmmaker and like historical figure.
Okay.
In that you wouldn't necessarily see Sofia Coppola as someone that would make a great historical drama. But actually, it really fits with who Marie Antoinette was, and it's a slightly weird Americanized thing. But it's good. It's good.
Mm.
What else? All the small actors are very good. Stephen Queen. They're all on the iPlayer now. I'd recommend those. Trying to think of what else have I seen lately? Because I just got one of those PS5s, you know, so I've been heavy on that. Yeah. But I am. My aim is to try and watch 500 films this year. I am currently at 432, so I have 68 more to go in a month, which is going to be quite hard going. I've left myself too much.
Yeah, that's. I hate to break it to you, but that just ain't happening, bro.
I don't know.
I was kind of. Wait, what did you say?
I'm already past 400.
You passed 432.
I'm on.
Oh, you can make 450.
Yeah. Oh, easily. Yeah.
But does this mean that over Christmas, like on Christmas Day and stuff, you just can spend the whole thing watching films because you'd be really like
probably
committed to this and you won't do anything else? Like you're woken up for Christmas dinner, you won't sleep because you're like, oh, no, I'll watch these films.
I'll have Christmas dinner, but you're watching Die Hard at the same time.
What do you classify as a film?
That's a big question.
Does like you could watch, I don't know, Charlie Bit My Finger, and that's a film.
Charlie Bit My Finger does not count. Oh, no, shit. But like, okay, like The Wrong Trousers would count, I think.
Okay, we just watched
The Wrong Trousers is a film. Like it's
The Wrong Trousers,
even though
I agree,
it's short.
The Wrong Trousers is the greatest film ever made.
It's one of those things, right? I hold the best film I've made is other than Crank, is Singing in the Rain. I won't argue with The Wrong Trousers. If you suggest The Wrong Trousers, it's one of those films I'll kind of go, all right, fair enough.
Have we previously spoken about Wallace and Gromit on this podcast? I feel like we have.
I think they've come up.
I feel like they came up. For some reason, I think it was Italy against Australia we spoke about.
I feel like really early on, we talked about what position Wallace and Gromit would play.
Yeah, I feel like we did. And we said Gromit would be a fly half. And Wallace would be like a really clumsy blindside or something like that.
Wallace would be a fullback who knocks the ball on, occasionally scores a spectacular try.
Wallace would play for Romania.
Yes. He's the Romanian Thomas Ramos.
Yes.
He is to Thomas Ramos what Mike Ringy was to Dan Carter.
I tell you, you just kind of indirectly compared Wallace to Dan Carter. In a rugby context.
Same person.
Yeah.
Same person, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you reckon? Because, like, you know how young kids are taught to... this is... The way that you teach somebody how to catch a rugby ball is by putting their targets up and making that W shape with your hands. So Wallace does that thing where he puts his hands together and shakes them. Do you think that's actually a pretty good example of how to catch a rugby ball, except you actually extend your fingers?
It's a terrible... That's why he didn't make it a professional standard.
Do you reckon he ever played?
No, he's clearly a cricket fan, isn't he? I'm pretty sure that's canon.
Oh, I think it is, you know.
Yeah. And besides, he's from Lancashire. He's a rugby league fan instead.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
He's got to be.
Yeah.
He's got to be.
I forgot about that. Yeah. I mean, I doubt he actually does have an interest in rugby league, but I wonder what he was like in PE in school, Wallace.
Yeah, because he was probably skipping out of it in order to create these mad inventions that he could use to do PE. Like, he'd invent, like, the Goalatronic 3000 that would automatically kick the ball into the net, wouldn't he?
You know what? I've just had this realisation. That how old do you reckon Wallace is at the start of the Wallace and Gromit franchise?
40.
Yeah. So this means that, like, going by the average lifespan of a dog... Which I imagine Gromit had longer than. But I imagine this means, even if we say that, like, upper boundary, Gromit is quite an old dog or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
That means that Wallace has probably lived at least, say, 30, 35 years without Gromit. What the hell did he do?
Imagine! Do you think he had just, like, Gromit's dad?
I hope he had somebody through generation. Because, like,
yeah.
I really like Wallace, you know, he's a nice, well-meaning guy.
Yeah.
But he's fucking useless without Gromit. Like, the amount of times he relies on his dog to drive him places because he can't do it himself.
Do you think he adopted the chicken?
Maybe.
And that's why he had these flashbacks when he saw Feathers McGraw.
And he
started to think... I know. So, the greatest villain in all of history.
All the listeners are currently, if we have anybody who's not tuned out by this point. But to be honest, again, I'd much rather talk about Wallace and Gromit the Wrong Trousers than Georgia against Romania 2011. But everybody is now realizing that this is the first time I've ever actually actively engaged in film discussion on this podcast because we're talking about Wallace and Gromit: The Wrong Trousers, yeah. Which is the greatest film of all time. But Feathers McGraw is a shit cunt.
Yes. Yeah. See, this is the kind of discussion you don't go on Egg Chasers. Can you imagine their takes on Wallace and Gromit? I think when you stop giving Feathers McGraw such a hard time, all he did was try and steal the most precious diamond and drive Gromit out into the doghouse outside.
I reckon when Stephen Jones first watched The Wrong Trousers, he probably said, "Oh, these chase scenes aren't nearly as good as they used to be. Oh, I don't like them anymore. Oh, these trousers are very bad. No, this is not a good film. This is all very bad. And I have loads of awards. I have your non-entity. You're blocked." You know?
Yeah. No, I can just imagine him. Stephen Jones would watch Wallace and Gromit with The Wrong Trousers, and he'd complain that The Wrong Trousers aren't very practical.
You know what? I think what we should do is, we should all, much like the Chad Plato thing, we should all get into Stephen Jones's mentions and ask him what he thinks of Wallace and Gromit: The Wrong Trousers.
You see that, like, all of our listeners aren't already blocked by him.
Thinking this. I'm not blocked by him.
I'm not. Like, and I had a swing at him the other day and he just didn't respond. He didn't block me. Yeah. It was amazing.
Well, I remember before you said when you once surpassed his follower count and thought, yes. Right, so I'm going to, at the perfect opportunity, he's going to say something, I'm going to call him a non-entity and block him.
That's always been my plan. Yeah. You know, when I ever took him, I call him a non-entity and block him.
And where I've just told your own joke for you.
Yeah. But... No, thank you. Thank you for doing so. It saved me time.
Yeah. And it stopped you saying about how many followers you have on Twitter.
6.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so...
But basically, oh, no, Feathers McGraw, we're not getting back to the game. Don't you dare try and get back to the game. Feathers McGraw is the greatest villain in the history of cinema. That evil chicken that's in The Wrong Trousers.
Though, that said, I am now caught up in this idea of, like, what would Austin Healey make of Feathers McGraw? He'd probably relate to him, wouldn't he?
Yeah. That's true, actually.
He'd go small, little, yappy, annoying guy who kind of saw the bigger picture.
Yeah.
That's Austin Healey all over, isn't it?
Yeah. Man, and I tell you what, for... I don't want to reveal the big plot twist at the end of The Wrong Trousers when, you know, the bit where...
He's a penguin.
Yeah, when it's him and...
He's a penguin.
When him and the penguin are the same person. Like...
No one saw that coming.
No. Like, every time it gets... I always forget, like, every time I watch it, which is a lot. Like, as a child, it was a thing that if I was, like, you know, asked to eat my tea, I'd be like, nope, I need to watch The Wrong Trousers first. And you can vouch for this.
I can vouch for that. Is that the Thomas the Tank Engine?
Yeah. And nobody's ever... I guarantee that there is no child who's like saying, like, oh, I'm eating sprouts. Like, no, I need to watch Georgia versus Romania 2011 first, you know?
What if there is? What if that kid is there, out there, and someday he grows up to captain Georgia to a World Cup?
I'm afraid I can't see it.
No, neither can I, to be honest.
No, I think I'd take...
But I would listen to that kid's podcast.
That's true. I mean, no, I wouldn't.
What if it's that game in particular? It's not I need to watch rugby of any kind.
Yeah, no, it's this game specifically.
Only this game?
Yeah.
Do you think... How many people do you think outside of Georgia have watched this game multiple times?
I reckon we're probably the only people who have watched this game in the year 2020.
I wouldn't be that surprised.
Yeah.
No, I think there's probably Georgians who watched it back.
Yeah, I guess so.
It was their first big World Cup win, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was kind of... At the time, it was probably their biggest win. They'd won by...
So it's been the year for watching back old rugby games, but...
Like, they won by 16 points, which is quite a margin for...
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, for their, against local rivals who they were kind of, like, very up and down against leading into this game. And both teams went in wanting to win it, and it's kind of a comprehensive margin. We're the only people in the UK to watch this back.
Sure.
This year.
My favourite part of this game... is that there's a point where you can see Gromit reading a newspaper and on the back of it, it says dog reads newspaper as like front page news. And I just think that's a great bit of observational satire.
It's very funny.
Visual satire.
The amount of just hidden little jokes are excellent.
Yeah.
I do love it.
Within this game or Wallace and Gromit: The Wrong Trousers?
Within this game, yeah. I love the bit in this game where... Gagonze just absolutely smashes Feather McGraw.
Oh, I would pay to see that.
completely bodies it.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're about 5 minutes away from the 45-minute mark of recording this, so if we could just pad until then we can talk about the try.
Yeah, should we talk about the try? Should we talk about Godzilla's try?
Yeah, okay, fine.
No, we can fill for 5 minutes, that's fine, then we can call it. There's a couple of bits before we go into the try, okay. Right? Should we talk about, I said there's three good things, right? We talked about the one time that someone caught a high ball.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Should we talk about the one sidestep?
Okay, I don't remember this.
So... Oh, man. Jabo Braganza, Romania hooker, who has been going forever.
Yeah.
You know, he's still playing. He played against Ireland last weekend. Really good player, really good hooker, really hard-nosed, nuggety, typical Georgian hooker. Won his first cap in 2008. So, you know, was kind of... Had been around a couple of years at this point. Pulls off a perfect sidestep. Someone rushes up on him, and he, like, leans one way, explodes off his left to go the other way. Someone else comes across, steps him as well, crashes over the game line. Spectacular. Great sidestep. It's like watching Shane Williams, but fat, bald, and Eastern European.
There's actually a second sidestep that happens, but unfortunately, it's Madelan Lemnaru, who goes on to play in the next World Cup and is very good at the next World Cup, but he hadn't really got much opportunity in this World Cup. After the final whistle, does a really good sidestep where he runs around somebody. And, like, I think that... I mean, I might be mistaken, but I think that's the first time he touches the ball in the whole game, was after the final whistle. And he's really committed to...
He looks very frustrated.
Yeah, running around somebody. Because he has and then the whistle goes. And it's like, oh, yeah.
It's the first burst of pace we see all game.
Yeah.
And it's after the game's finished.
Yeah, because the referee's playing advantage to Romania but for a knock-on. And Georgia end up kicking it far downfield, and the referee just kind of thinks, oh, no advantages are coming from there. And so Lemnaru picks it up on his own try line and steps somebody and starts running, thinking he's going to score, and the final whistle goes, thankfully. But yeah.
But at the same time, we could have had a highlight in this game.
True. But yeah, no, speaking of Bregvadze, I suppose in the lead-up to the TRY, don't say it too loudly, but he has this nice little, I guess, what is relative to this game, a break.
Yes.
He's put through, sort of through the defensive line, because he runs a really nice line. And the Georgian commentators really wake up for the first time when that happens.
They start screaming.
I think it's the same people who commentated on the Georgia-England game, where they were just bored the whole way through. But yeah, no, they start really enjoying that.
Who can blame them?
Yeah, of course. Then, well, to be fair, it was the most enjoyable Georgia match of this whole World Cup. For Scotland.
For them, anyway, yeah.
And this. But yeah, Bregvadze makes a second, I guess, kind of break from an offload. And I think he then finds a pass for Zerikashvili, who's running onto the ball. Mm. Georgia then have a very nice sort of calm phase of possession, get into the 22. And this is the only time, like, honestly, I could have told you from the moment Bregvadze ran that line on about halfway, like, this is going to be the passage of play that leads to the try, isn't it? Because the first time, it's the only time in the game where one team looks particularly threatening and looks like...
Where they look composed.
Yeah, it just looks like if they keep hold of the ball, they're going to go forward here. And, like, they realised once they had a bit of momentum, like, oh, this is what we do, this is what we do. And everybody was on the same hymn sheet at that point. I don't know why it didn't happen in the whole rest of the game for either team, frankly.
There's another point shortly after this where Georgia have about a 5-on-2 and Kvirikashvili kind of dummies, goes himself, makes quite a nice little half break, and they keep the pressure up, and they play for 18 straight phases. As you say, it's the only time one team remains composed and actually attacks with any purpose.
Yeah.
And it's one of these things, like, I get so bored of people saying, oh, just keep all the ball instead of, well, you're kicking it all the time. But at the same time, it only took one good carry for them to get going forward, you know? Yeah. And there were a couple of other points in which Georgia got a few good carries and they'd knock it on or whatever. So I get it's kind of damage limitation. But the moment they play off accuracy, the try comes, and that is the thing that seals the game.
Yeah.
You know, they would have won anyway because of the they're actually kicking their goals. But the try decides the match.
Sure. And there's sort of two phases before the try. Mamuku Ugarte does this really good pick and go where he carries two Romanians with him. And that's what really sets the tone, is he gets Georgia to within 5 meters of the Romanian line and sets up, I think, Basilaia then has another shove for the line. And at that point, I think Georgia just kind of panic and just go, well, Gogoza knows what he's doing, so if he fancies having another carry, and so they pass to him, and he just manages to isolate one Romanian defender and just carry him over the line with him and score.
One of the Romanians is told they're offside just as they're about to tackle him, and he kind of takes a moment to adjust in a, oh, sorry, I should step back, and everyone's like, no, I shouldn't, I'm already offside, I've already given away the penalty, I should make the tackle, by which point it's too late, because he's kind of got the go forward on him.
Frankly,
he's got the momentum.
That guy certainly should have committed to that tackle, and just, he probably wouldn't have been given a yellow card, is the worst thing.
But also, it's exactly the thing I was saying about the Romanian defence, that they kind of walk up, they get in your face, and then they let you do whatever you like. Yeah. And in this case, Gogodze went, I'm going to score, thanks.
Yeah. So Gogodze scores the try, and the commentators start to hurt my ears at that point, because they get very
close. They don't care about clipping levels, do they? Like, they lose it, and the microphones cannot cope.
Yeah. They do not know how to use their mics.
No, they do not know how to avoid levels. They've got clearly not got a producer. He's off asleep in the back with a cigarette hanging on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, there's already dropped down and started a minor fire in the control room, so they can't adjust the levels. It hurts your ears, and you've got this kind of like interference coming back on the other side because they're just screaming so loud.
So Gogodza scores that try, and Georgia end up going 19-6 up. And you think, okay, this is, it could be the start of something. From the kickoff, Dmitry Basilaia, who, as you said, is the Georgian number 8, makes a bit of a, again, relative to the game, a break.
Yeah.
And does this nice little offload to Tedo Zibzibadze, who's playing centre. And again, you're thinking like, okay, this could be a start of some decent attacking patterns here. And just nothing else happens for the rest of the game.
Well, you say that. You say that like the three best moments of the game don't all come right at the death.
Okay, there's a couple of things I'm thinking of that you might be meaning.
So, there is one thing that is legitimately good.
Yeah.
And it feels a bit like a reward. It comes in the 79th minute. The Georgian replacement prop.
Yes. Kakovin.
Kakovin, yes. Neither do I. Vasil Kakovin. 79th minute, right? He takes a nice offload and outpaces the entire Romanian backline. And he's got that kind of high knees looking behind him, trying to make sure no one's tackling. It's like a touch rugby break when you're kind of very aware that you don't want anyone to touch you. And he's kind of running, like someone tries to ankle tap him, he kind of does like the Shane Williams on Bottie Decure, kind of step away from it. It's glorious, and it feels like a reward for everyone who's persevered with this game. It's like you're getting a glorious prop break, and then he sprints straight into the fullback and knocks it on. But
my favourite part of that is the fact that, you know, that Tomas Ramos try from the weekend where he steps through a load of people, and then there's the point where he puts the ball back into two hands like he's going to pass, and then the fullback sort of slows his feet down and he decides, transfers it back into one hand and outpaces the fullback. I like how Kakovin on this break has that moment where he tries to do that, puts it in two hands like, oh yeah, I'm going to pass. No, I'm going to take you on the outside for pace. And obviously he's really slow, so he doesn't do it. But I really like the novelty.
I don't know. He's quicker than the Romanian backline. To be fair, so are those wooden toy ducks you'd play with as a child. It's a moment of utter glory. Yeah. And it did. It felt like a reward for persevering and seeing this out to the end.
Yeah.
Right at the death, you get something kind of cool.
There's another kind of, relative to this, again, cool moment, which is there's a point after a scrum where I believe Georgia are penalised at scrum time, but Maruko Gogodze has picked the ball up and started running off. And after the referee's blown his whistle, Gogodza's run off after he's blown the whistle
and loses
the ball behind his back. But the ball bounced back onto his back. I keep saying the word back. He's running like Neil Back.
Mm.
No, but he's running and the ball's just kind of bobbling along his back and he's got his hands behind there trying to regather it constantly. And eventually he comes back up with it and he juggles it like 6 or 7 times on his back and eventually comes up with the ball. And you just spend the whole thing really hoping he doesn't drop it.
But the interesting thing about that is, I think he has it under control a few bobbles further out. Then he realises what's going on. He realises he's been called back. And he just keeps doing it as a bit.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, that is That is Mamuka Gugodze's sense of humour, apparently.
It for sure is, you know, commitment to a bit, isn't it? The way that he carried on to do an extra few doubles.
I assumed Gugodze's sense of humour would be sending a boy who obviously can't eat a bear in one bite in to try and eat a bear in one bite. And
then the moment the boy is like...
Exactly. The moment the child is in the corner cowering, half dead, Gugodze would walk in, flick the bear away, and then just eat him.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I had in mind. But juggling a ball on your back is...
Yeah, that was the second funniest thing in the world to Mamuka Gugodze, after almost dead children.
Yeah.
Yes. However, speaking of death and funny, funny things, there's a moment in this game that made me properly howl. And I think, you know, we talked about the Russian non-yellow card against Ireland, which was pretty spectacular. But
is it the point where Fenris McGraw starts jumping on the bed?
Yeah. No. No. It's the chase at the end of the train tracks.
Oh, when Gromit catches him in the bottle. Oh, it's so good.
It's great. There was a great director's roundtable a few years ago, as they do near the Oscars each year, where they were each asked, like, if you could pick one, like, 10-minute sequence in the history of cinema to show to aliens, what would you pick as, like, the greatest sequence in the history of film?
Mate, I'd warn them about feathers.
Danny Boyle said the end of Wallace and Gromit: The Wrong Trousers. And I agree.
Yeah.
It's hard to argue with that.
Did anyone say Kakovin's break at the end of George vs. Romania 2011?
Yeah, they did. Weirdly, yeah. Weirdly, Jean-Luc Godard is really into that break.
Huh.
Didn't see that one coming.
No.
Yeah, he wanted more jump cuts in it, but otherwise. So, the two moments, right? The two great moments towards the end. But my favourite, the one that made me utterly, utterly howl, is Romania Kick It Long, where Merab Kvirikashvili is covering, right? He's very used to the position. He played fullback in the previous World Cup.
Coming.
He played fullback in the following World Cup.
Yeah.
He played fullback either side of this, but he played 10 in this World Cup for Georgia. And as I say, he was in contention for Man of the Match for me because he was the one person kicking his goals. And, you know, he made a couple of nice breaks. He did, again, relative to this game. He was all right. He was solid enough.
Sure.
He could actually pass as well, which is weird. So he's covering, and he goes to do a little chip over the top. He spots some space in behind. Except the chip is so bad that he doesn't even get as far as the Romanian defence.
And he does it when he's got about 10-15 metres still to go before he's at the defensive line.
So the chip barely hits his head's height. It then begins to drop just before he gets the Romanian defence. He obviously reaches out to try and regather it and knocks it on.
Yeah.
And it made me howl with laughter, that. Because it looked like the first moment of invention in the game, and it goes so badly, so in character with this match, that he couldn't chip it as far as the defensive line, and instead he knocked it on and then gets smashed and knocks it on again.
So cringy.
He then, 5 minutes later, Georgia have a penalty advantage, and he slots into the pocket to try for a drop goal, thinking, we'll take the free, we'll settle things down, we'll pull ahead to 22-6.
And he barely makes the 22-metre line.
No. It's worse than that. He kicks it into touch. The drop goal goes so badly that it skews... He stood to the left of the post, and the drop goal goes out over the left-hand touchline. Like, it curves back. It doesn't go anywhere near. It flies away from the post towards and then bounces out like 5 metres out from the try line as though it was a great touch finder, but it's a drop goal attempt.
Yeah, it's really bad.
I don't think I've ever seen another drop goal attempt actually go into touch.
Yeah.
Like, not dead. Not at the dead ball line, into touch.
So bad. But yeah, the last thing I want to talk about in this game is that obviously after the Gugodze try, there's another couple of penalties, I guess. Or there's another penalty, even. And Georgia are 22-6 up. And Romania get a penalty on the Georgian 22. And they take the points to go 22-9 with 10 minutes to go. I just think that's a really...
What an odd decision.
It's a really stupid, unambitious, just dull decision. I really don't like it, because it just shows that they're just going through the motions with this game and not trying to actually go out and do something creative and win the game, which is really annoying, because you compare that to like the Scotland game, where they looked like a really ambitious team. And I said it at the time, that like the way that they mauled through the Scottish pack for that Lazar try was just so creative and so like ahead of time. And yet, at this point, them taking that 3 points was just really dull.
I wondered if Tinku just didn't know the score.
I don't know, but...
Because it felt quite even, the game as a whole. But actually, by that point, George had really pulled ahead, because whereas they're having equal numbers of shots at goal, Romania were missing them and Georgia were nailing them.
And
so I don't know if he just didn't know that they were, what, 16 points behind?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, there's a lot of penalties, isn't it?
But... yeah, they were 16 points behind and they had 10 minutes to go. A try puts them back in kind of contention.
Yeah.
And it was it wasn't an easy shot at goal considering how bad their kicking had been as well.
Yeah. And obviously gets the kick, doesn't he? But
yeah,
it's still, as I say, it strikes me as really unambitious, and that's a shame. And for the record, it was well done to the Romanian coaching staff for leaving Tinker One for the full game this time after witnessing how Bogdan Suman played against England.
Whereas Georgia do not do that, and they, for some reason, bingo Godze off with 5 minutes to go.
I think
and
they we know then have that to they endure... have Argentina coming up next week, to be fair.
Sure, okay. But we then have to endure 5 whole minutes where the best thing about this game isn't on the pitch.
Yeah. Yeah. That's difficult.
And there was a moment when I kind of looked up at the clock and I saw 78 minutes and I felt dread.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't feel like, oh, there's 2 minutes to go. It felt like, oh, it's two whole
minutes. Got 120
minutes.
More seconds of this, boys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know that thing where, like, we sat on the toilet and then one of the Sanyula brothers comes out? No.
Yeah.
When you sat on the toilet and you're kind of flicking through watching like little videos on Twitter or whatever, and there's like a 28 second video and you get 14 seconds in and you stop it because you can't be bothered to watch the rest because you're kind of bored. It felt big time like that, but 2 whole minutes.
You know, do you remember when Vine was a thing and they were all 6 seconds long? And you'd watch them for a little bit, and then afterwards any video that's over 10 seconds feels like an eternity.
God, I know. Well, especially those ones.
You know,
there's these really stupid YouTube videos that call something like Splodge Rugby.
I was going to say that important videos playlist on YouTube, which is brilliant for the record. But like, are you aware of this?
No, I don't think
so. No, oh, it's incredible. Just on YouTube, just search important videos and it's great. Mm. There's just so many, there's a lot of good bits on there. But you reach a point in that playlist.
Is there this game?
Sadly not. And there's nothing from the wrong trousers as far as I can remember on there.
Oh.
But there's a point in that playlist where you're a couple of hours in and a video comes up that's like 30 seconds. You think, I can't be bothered with this. It's too long. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of that vibe over the last 2 minutes.
Should we move on to Man of the Match and Dick of the Day?
Let's do that. Yeah. Oh, man, we're almost done. Yeah. We're almost through this. I can't believe it.
Man of the Match is called Godze. Anyway.
Yeah, Man of the Match is Mamuka Godze. As I say, I think there's a word for Merab for making a break and kicking a few goals, which was ultimately the difference. I think Basilea has a weird game because he carries extremely well, but he also just knocks the ball on and he can't pass and so on. Like, core skills poor, carrying very good, and I think Brigadza has a good game.
There's one point where Basilea drops the ball and then he kicks it out of frustration. It goes miles, and it's like, mate, you could have done this in actual play.
Next time.
But yeah, no, Godza does the nuts and bolts very well and scores a try. Yeah. So I just feel
and
like...
carries really well. Yeah. You know, the only times either team looked like scoring was when Godza started, you know, made a big carry when he'd get himself involved. So Mamuka Godze, like, way, way, way far and away, Man of the Match, dude. I don't know what happened. What's happened to me? Why have I done this? Yeah, Mamuka Godze, unanimous two-way Man of the Match. And my dick of the day is time for being linear and forcing me to watch this game as I did.
My dick of the day is Merab Gurakashvili for that attempt to chip over the top, which was just really horrific.
Oh my God. I know.
Yeah. And with that, we say la revedere to Romania.
Oh, hold on. Shit, hold on. Give me a minute.
Okay.
Here we are. Welcome to the Romanian leaving party.
I have just searched what is goodbye in Romanian on Google, and that's
and
what's come up with.
Say it again.
La revedere.
La revedere.
To Romania.
Also a river in France.
Yeah. I mean, Romania obviously were very bad in this game, but I feel like they've been good enough fun during this World Cup, I think.
They've been good company, haven't they?
More so than Georgia, frankly.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, they were good in the Scotland game, you know, nearly caused an upset. And they played their part in a very entertaining game against Argentina. As I say, like, England took them to the cleaners a little bit. But, you know, there have been highlights for Romania. I feel like their best player was far and away Marius Tinku. And I don't really think that's up for debate. But
I think...
yeah.
I think there have been more stand-up players for Romania than Georgia.
Yeah, agreed.
I think both of them had a big standout in Gogodze, but for Romania, Tinku.
Yeah.
He obviously was the captain this time. Glad he'll be the captain by next time. Yeah, Marius Tinku, far and away their best player. Yeah. I thought both second rows were very solid, consistently. Christian Petra and then Urashi as well.
Sasha goes on to become outstanding at the 2015 World Cup as well.
Yeah. As does Mihai Makavei, who is solid enough here.
Yeah. And Sasha ended up having a good career with. I think it's Oyana he ended up signing for and had a really good career and played some good rugby in Europe as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. As you said, yeah, Makavei and Karpo, I think, was good. And
Karpo,
I think,
great. Yeah.
If I were to pick a next best player aside from Tinku, frankly, it'd be Mihai Lazar.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say that as well. Actually, when you were talking about this game gone, the other players, I think, had good games with the two remaining props.
Yeah.
I think Lazar and Ion had good games. And they had that kind of thing that people keep talking about how great Georgia's scrum is and how they've dominated it. Really, they only dominated in 2015 when they had Zavid Djurkaeshvili, who was at the time the best tight end in the world by a margin.
Yeah.
And they then, you know, 2019, last year, they got dominated in the scrum by Fiji. And here they were being, at one point, actually shoved off the ball by Romania.
Yeah.
Romania had the edge in the scrum.
Yeah. Made very difficult.
And Georgia have consistently had a solid scrum, but they haven't been dominant at all by any stretch. Their kind of whole history. Just because they're big lads and they've got, they produce so many props that you kind of mix that up with producing a handful of really world-class props.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is more what you need to win a World Cup, you know? It's like how Wales have always produced really solid scrum halves.
Yeah.
And so there'll always be like 40 Welsh scrum halves playing Test rugby, whereas and then the national team will struggle to have one they can pick.
Yeah.
Or second choice.
The other, I mean, we've only picked out forwards there, but if I was to pick one back that I think has been quite fun, it's been Julian Dumitrașu, I think is a good novelty.
Yeah.
Whether or not he actually played well, it was fun. For just having a massive boot.
Not as good as I kind of, as he was in my mind.
Yeah.
You know, my nostalgia for him having an enormous boot kind of clouded how meh he was and how the fact that he clearly kept boots on his hands as well.
Sure.
And he couldn't really catch.
Yeah. No, he couldn't catch at all. But
it was one of those things you'd occasionally see clips of him, and especially when I was, you know, like, what was it, 16 watching this World Cup.
Yeah.
And you kind of go, he's got an enormous boot. Why isn't some club in France or England signing him? And then you kind of, watching him back here, it's like, no, that's why. Because his core skills are not great.
Don't stop the music.
Why?
Fair enough. Because I was about to see if we have a dick at the tournament.
Who should touch our bum? This is life.
What?
It's the Cheeky Girls, isn't it? It's Romania's most famous musical exports. The Cheeky Girls.
Do you have a dick at the tournament?
It's hard to see beyond Bogdan Suma, isn't
it? I was about to say the same.
I feel for him a bit, but...
Yeah.
Bogdan Suman. The Cheeky Girls would ask him to touch their bum, this is life, and then he'd just miss it completely. He'd touch their shoulder instead or something.
Great name, though, he has. I think Bogdan Suman has to get the dick of the tournament for Romania.
And let me tell you, they threw up some contenders in this last game.
Yeah, they sure did. Yeah. I think... is that as more or less done, do you reckon?
Pretty much, I guess. I don't know if I've got anything else to say about Wales and Gromit.
Yeah. The last thing, I'd like to just to, as a way of saying thanks to anybody who's listened this far, I would just like to maybe read out a review or two.
Put a prop break in.
Yeah. Because, you know, a few people have left nice reviews. I just think it would be nice to, you know, to do it. And to make us feel better after having talked about this game for a while. So, there is a really nice review from JPCA, where he's put brilliant, 5 stars.
Oh,
and said,
that's nice.
Great mixture of contextual humour with genuine commentary in the review of thoughts at the time and compare it to how it's played today. Beat rugby podcast, which I presume means best, but...
Or maybe we just beat... You know how the Egg Chasers handle is at rugby podcast?
Yeah.
Maybe we just beat them like an egg
I think
and then serve them in an omelette.
Yeah.
Yeah, like an egg chaser.
Or we remix them and make some sick beats out of it.
We should do that. We should find the points that are listenable in their podcast.
Maybe Jay listens on Beats by Dre.
I hope so. Sorry, I've mentioned them quite a lot today, haven't I?
Yeah.
We avoided mentioning them at the start, and then I've just...
Who
just
said that's who I was
twice.
On about?
Oh, I mean, which other irrelevant rugby podcaster just serves hot takes for no one's game? Like, I had this thought yesterday, right? Okay, I'm just going to say this out loud. We're this far into the podcast, but who cares? If the Egg Chasers was around in 2004, they'd have done a full episode saying everyone needs to stop giving Mark Session such a hard time.
I've just, for the sake of balance,
yeah,
I want to read out, you know, a negative review for the balance, because, you know, I've just read out a really nice positive one. Unsubscribe. There are better pods out there. 1 star.
Okay.
You'll really Fair enjoy enough. This if you're a white, upper middle class conservative. That review...
Yeah.
Hang on. I've just made a mistake. That review was actually on the Egg Chasers, not us. Never mind.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. That's the most recent review on the Egg Chasers.
From Mark Session.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you, Jay, for that review thank on you. Our podcast, saying that we have genuinely decent analysis, apparently.
That's good.
Genuine
of Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah, sure. And contextual humour. Humour's a strong word, Jay, but much appreciated.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you, Jay. And, much appreciated.
I think that comparing Rugby from 2011 to how it's played today is something that we find very interesting, and it's good to know that that's translated to listeners and that they're not sick of us. They might be by now, to be fair, given how this episode started. But, yeah. There's one more. I'll read... Yeah, one more out. Prof Yoffles, I think that's pronounced.
Nice. Prof Yoffles.
Yeah. Spelt like waffles, but with a Y.
Nice.
Says, awesome. For a podcast about Thai cinema, they talk about rugby a lot. 5 stars.
I honestly don't think we talk about Thai cinema enough.
No, I don't think so.
I feel like we need to move ourselves out of that category on iTunes.
I'm just very glad that we've spoken at length about Wallace and Gromit now, so...
Yes, yeah, we have covered the important topics.
Good to
relax
those demons.
The two most important films of all time, which are, of course, Uncle Boomy, Who Can Recall His Past Lives, and Wallace and Gromit, The Wrong Trousers.
Exactly. Yeah, that's all I have to say. We've read out two positive reviews, one negative review, even if they weren't all on our podcast. Have you anything to add?
I don't think so.
No.
I think we covered everything I possibly could have written in my notes about this game. I'm very glad it's over.
Me too.
And we will see you next time when the game is actually, it's a good game of rugby. As I recall anyway, you know, who knows? Who can remember? South Africa against Samoa. And the best thing is there's plenty more outside of that game to dive into because that inspired some back chat.
It sure did. Yeah, so we'll see you there, I suppose. And in the meantime, we'll try and gather up Stephen Jones's thoughts on Wallace and Gromit The Wrong Trousers.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you to everyone as ever who made Child Plato sign for Zebra. Yeah. And we'll... I think his Wikipedia page still says that as well.
I hope so.
And we'll see you next time for more Wallace and Gromit.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.